The Dr. Peter Bragan Hour, Mondays at 5 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Are you ready for the conscience of psychiatry? For the best-selling author of Talking Back to Prozac, Toxic Psychiatry, and Medication Madness? It's the Dr. Peter Bragan Hour with guests and callers seeking the truth about psychiatry and psychotherapy and how you can make the most of your own life right here on the Progressive Radio Network.
And this is Dr. Peter Bragan. My guest, Gary Unruh, is an MSW and a licensed clinical social worker. He has a huge amount of experience. He's worked with 2,500 or more children over a few decades as a counselor. And he's the author of Unleashing the Power of Parental Love, Four Steps to Raising Respectful and Self-Confident Kids, with the hope that our connection lasts and the show goes on. Gary, are you there?
Yes, I am. How are you today?
Well, I'm a little stressed, using all my skills to stay in touch with myself and with you and with our listening audience. How are you today? You're also on vacation today.
Actually, I had the first part of my vacation up in Vail, Colorado with about four of my nine grandchildren and my wife, and I drove down this morning to my office. And I'm right here in my office, seeing several patients, and can't wait to talk with you today and share my experiences.
Well, I've spent a lot of time with family, too, including my my daughter Allie and her husband and our grandchild, and then lots of other family sailing around. And I had an exciting day. I did my first solo one of these personal watercrafts, jet ski. I did my first jet ski today, which is at the age of 75, was an exciting event. I did fine up to 22 miles an hour.
Whoa.
And then went into sheer terror up to 35 miles an hour.
That's awesome. Congratulations.
It was very exciting. So we're here to talk about life, and we're here in particular to talk about children. And why don't you just launch into talking about Unleashing the Power of Parental Love, the title of your book, and the four steps. Now let's give a really practical show on raising kids across the spectrum, from super-duper easy kids, if there are any, to really, really difficult, problematic kids. Take over for a few minutes.
Yes, I will, and thank you for that nice introduction. Well, I've been involved as a counselor, psychotherapist, whatever you want to call it, helping kids to feel good about themselves for the last four decades. And about a decade and a half ago, I had done research on just about every parenting approach there was and the different theorists, and take all of that stuff seriously, and I thought there's got to be more. And I thought, is there more? And believe it or not, I realized that the answer I felt was really in just plain loving your children. But just to tell people love your children, as you well know, doesn't work. So I dedicated the rest of my life about 15 years ago to start studying this, and the book is a result of that. And if I may, I can just give a real brief 1-2 minute comment about what I think love's all about.
Okay.
First of all, I realized it's really about empathy, and that is the ability and demonstrating the ability to another person, and in this case we're talking about children, that me as a parent, that I know for sure that I'm sharing, listening, and sharing what I have heard from the child so that the child feels like their feelings have been heard from the very depths of their heart and that I'm responding to that. So that's the key, being able to identify with the child's feelings to the point that the child feels, my mom and dad really know what I feel. What I realized is what really gets into the serious problem is when we focus on a child's behavior, and you know as a grandparent and as a parent, the behavior takes center stage all the time, and what happens is, I found out, we ignore, not on purpose, but we tend to ignore the feeling part. And what I found out is that the feelings actually represent the core of the child, and when the child feels that we know the feeling, they actually feel good and accepted, and that's really the stage upon which we can deal with behavior effectively.
All right, now, that all sounds real good, and I believe it,
yeah.
But of course it gets a lot more complicated than that. So talk some about the issues of maintaining this loving, empathic stance while, and this is very difficult,
yep,
dealing with an angry, hostile, upset child, dealing with yourself when you're angry, hostile, and upset, and setting boundaries, because I think setting boundaries is at least number two or three next to empathic love. So what are your thoughts on that?
Let me give you an example. It all starts with a 2-3-year-old for autonomy, and the world revolves around me, doesn't it? Kind of gives you that message, and the first thing that you're going to have is that when I want something as a 2- and 3-year-old, I want it now. So the tendency is to say, stop that and take your hands off of that, and that's the boundary that you're supposed to set. But the problem of it is you're missing the causation of it, and that's the feeling that the child has inside. For example, if they're reaching for that vase, that probably would have been best to put it up anyway. It's really important if you can just take a couple of seconds and say, as you hold on to the child's hand, that is really a pretty vase, and you'd really like that, wouldn't you? It'd be fun to play with it. But you can't play with it. Now you're upset that you can't get it, and I'm going to stop you from getting it. So indicating to the child, you like it, that's the empathy part, you're upset about it, that's the feeling part, and now the behavior is, I can't let you take that vase just because you want it. That kind of series of a consequential type situation is what really is the answer to this. Identify to the child what they're feeling and what they're wanting, and then they know what that is, and then put the boundaries in front of them. And that goes all the way to a teenager. Late constantly, 2, 3, 4 weeks, you've been reminding to come in on time, and finally it's time, other than to say, you're going to have the car taken away from you if you do that one more time. Take the time to say, what is it that makes you want to be late all the time? Of course, the teenager's going to say, all the rest of the parents let their kids stay up all hours of the night. Why don't you? So what are you feeling about that, about me? Child's going to get to the feelings pretty soon, the adolescent. The adolescent's going to say, well, I think it's unfair. That's not quite a feeling. And then the adolescent's going to say, I'm really upset that you do that. And then you say back to validate the feeling, you know, you should be upset about that. Anybody'd want to stay out late like you say, all the rest of the kids. But in this home, we really can't do that. So you should be upset about it. But in this home, we got to follow the rules, no matter whether you're upset or not. And by the way, Jilly, I don't want you to be using any swear words with me when you're upset. I want you to tell me, I'm mad at you, Dad. That's acceptable. And if you don't do that and you use swear words, there's going to be a consequence. So that would be a brief, in the nutshell, comment about all the way from toddlerhood all the way up to adolescence.
Gary, let me interrupt you. We're facing an interesting circumstance here. I've got huge thunder and lightning outside my windows. I've been losing you, but I think you're going to stay in touch with the show. So I don't know. Have you ever done radio before, Gary?
Yes. Yes, I have.
Well, if you lose me.
And I did just lose Peter there, and I don't know whether we can continue with it or not. I could say just a little bit more here with Peter not on the phone, and maybe he'll come back and give me some feedback when he's on the phone again. But I would just summarize what I said. I'm assuming that I was coming across the airways, that the basic rule in my approach of parental love is instead of focusing just on the behavior, which is typical of every parent because we have to set boundaries, first validate and focus on the feelings that are causing the behavior. And that's really kind of cumbersome when your child is arguing with you and you know you've got the most important point and your child wants to give the last point. And you tend to want to do that too by the lecturing. Stop that part of it. Stop the arguing and get back to focusing on the feelings first. And let's see if Peter is there yet. I don't think he is. I don't know if we're still on the airway or not, hearing a little bit of music in the background.
I am back on the air. Anybody there?
Yes. I just went ahead with you not on the air and just summarized by saying it's basically a feelings first, behavior second, Peter.
Yes. Just, again, keep my readers in touch with this exciting moments here. I'm now on a cell phone here in North Carolina with the thunderstorm coming across the sound. And presumably it won't knock out my cell phone, but I don't imagine the sound will be as good for this show as some others.
Peter, it's actually coming across to me very clear.
Well, that's great. That is very, very good news. Well, I really want you to talk some more about this issue of setting boundaries, because I think keeping our wits about us to be in a loving mode, because a lot of what goes wrong in bringing up a child, the first is losing track of the empathy and the asking what the child's feeling and being in touch with the child. But a lot of it is also about the failure to set clear and careful boundaries in a loving manner, but in a manner that really isn't discussable, in my opinion, in a manner that has moral authority. Your reaction to that?
Yes. First of all, my own theoretical background makes it very clear to me in my experience as a father of four adult children and 9 grandchildren, developmentally, the emotions and the behaviors from very early on naturally come out abruptly. And just from a developmental point of view, it's very important that control of behaviors and inappropriate words and that type of thing be learned. It's a learned process. So just based upon that theoretical background, the control of behaviors so that behaviors become appropriate, and the control of the verbalizations that happen, all the words that are said so that they're appropriate, that has to come from outside, and that's the parent's role. So setting boundaries when something happens that isn't appropriate, the parent's role is to be firm with the behavior that's inappropriate and state that behavior's not appropriate, and I find consequences in the form of rewards, timeouts, going to the room, need to be clearly stated as soon as possible. And then what's very important, hard to do, is to follow through with it. And we've got a trend in our country that's been all over the internet and all over the airwaves and in the newspapers, and that's permissive parents. Matter of fact, the other day I just read an author that said, we've raised kids to have good self-esteem, but they're dumb. And what they mean by dumb is that we're about 17th in terms of our academic performance in the world in many subjects. And what many of the authors are saying and the media is saying, and there's a lot of truth to it, we simply have not been firm enough with our kids, setting boundaries with them when inappropriate behaviors happen, because we're so concerned we'll hurt their feelings. And I would conclude this point and then wait for further questions. It is critical that we set boundaries to achieve control, which translates into appropriate behavior. And that's very important.
You remember Ben Spock, of course. He was the most famous doctor in the world for a number of decades, the most famous pediatrician in the world. And he wrote lots of baby books. They filled the racks of drugstores. And I actually had the privilege of having Ben Spock be my individual, in effect, private tutor for 4 years of medical school. And,
incredible.
At Case Western Reserve, we had a baby. We had a mother, and mother was pregnant, and she'd have a baby. And and we got to follow the pregnancy and then the baby for the 4 years of med school with big, tall, thin Ben Spock draped over me, teaching me how to examine the infant. And Spock set a tone of empathy,
yes,
and love. It was a good thing, but it also helped contribute to an a generation that really didn't understand the importance of discipline.
Yes.
Self-discipline.
Yes.
Respect for others, respect for institutions to the extent that they are respectable, and when you don't respect them, finding rational ways of dealing with them rather than outrageous ways.
Yes.
So when I like to emphasize love too, but very often in my practice, and you know, I'm a big proponent of empathic unconditional love. It's the name of our center, the Center for the Study of Empathic Therapy Education,
sure,
and Living. But I find that probably the central problem in people who come to see me with their kids is they don't approach their kids as if they're the adults and they're in charge.
Right.
Because they don't do that, they don't dare love and be forthcoming with that because they feel too vulnerable, and they don't dare to discipline because they're not sure it's right.
Yes.
They commonly say things to me like, well, it doesn't matter what I say to my child. My child doesn't pay any attention to me, whether the kid's 4 or 14. And I really work hard with people on you have moral authority. You got to leave this office determined that your child will listen to you. And they say, well, what do I do, punish them, this or that? And I say, well, you know, set that aside for a while. The single most important thing is the look in your eye which says, I'm in charge, I'm the boss, you're the child, I love you, and that's separate from you're going to listen to what I have to say.
Very well put.
Your thoughts, and yes, feel free to disagree.
Yes, I do. You and I did a little prep work on this, and it's mutual. But I agree with what you're saying. And here's where the rubber hits the road for me. First, number one, I believe that parents that really have a very deep love for their children, I think, and it's typical of so many of us, they're fearful of a angry reaction. Typically, I think that humans, when they get an angry reaction, they feel like they've done something wrong and it's not good for the child in this particular case. In my practice, I believe that's the primary reason that parents do not set limits. And I'm going to give you what has really worked in terms of getting past that in just a minute. So there's another major thing that's happened since Spock, and I did not train under him, by the way. What a thrill that must have been to have been in his presence. But happens is that there was so much emphasis against spanking from that period on, from Spock on, that there's been I think parents have equated spanking with setting firm limits, and they've gone too far in the wrong direction where they're fearful of the child's angry reactions and they do not want to spank, and all they're left with is consequences. And here's the part that I feel has really helped parents get over the fear of anger and the lack of ability to use consequences in the place of spanking. By the way, spanking I do not support in any way, shape, or form, but it did one thing that often consequences and timeouts and rewards really don't do, and that is it made the child believe you're the boss, you're the authority, and the word I use is you mean business. And that's what we need to get back to with children from the authority point of view. I, as the parent, mean business, and the child listens and performs. And here's then the step that needs to be taken. Almost no lecturing after you've given your expectation to the child. Instead of lecturing, have a consequence right ready to go that the child, as much as you can, is ready to hear, because you prepared them, and act. And the statement that I use on this is act, don't yak. That's the single most important operational way to deal with this, because when you act and the child may be screaming and yelling with the anger, and you don't let the anger deter you from implementing and executing the consequence, the more you can do that immediately, the better. And a little bit later on, I'll share with you how I help parents deal with their own anger and a child's anger.
It's interesting. You put more emphasis on the consequences than I do. I think, one, especially with young children, one of the most simply important consequences is that if the child is disrespectful, the child gets nowhere.
Yes.
So I really advise strongly to parents that, you know, if your child talks to you disrespectfully, you just simply say that gets nowhere, and you don't give them anything they want. You don't even have a conversation with them.
Exactly.
You explain to them that that's just outside the realm of what you're going to do. Get respect established.
I just couldn't agree with you more. And, you know, in our quest to be as empathetic as possible, we forget that when we're being this understanding, like I talk about in my book, Supporting the Good in a Child, we have to teach the child to be respectful of the other person's feelings. And they're not born to be respectful. They're born to say what I want when I want it. And we have to, just exactly what you've said, we have to have consequences and firm action in order to teach, hold in that disrespectful comment and don't say anything at all. Or if you have to say something, we need to teach a child to say it respectfully. And we've lost a lot of that with our kids.
Yeah.
We see it in school all the time where clients come in here to me and they tell me that they're so upset with the school system because the school system will not allow their child to give their point of view. Now, I agree their point of view needs to be given in certain circumstances, but there's not enough training in the home that when I say no, I mean it, and you have to obey me. It's a tough balance. It's really, really difficult. But a lot of these kids end up believing that they can discuss everything and that they don't have to accept no for an answer. And in my practice, I help the parents know when they say no, there's no discussion, and when it's time for discussion. That's the respectful piece.
Yeah, again, I like that concept of the concept, obviously, of moral authority, that the parent really has to feel the duty and the right to help the child grow up.
Yes.
And that doesn't mean lengthy discussions about simple decisions, you know, when you come home at night. You can have a simple discussion about maybe once, but a lot of things should just simply be determined, especially the younger the child. They should just be determined, what do you really look out genuinely for? The needs of the child, the needs to play, the needs to have time to run around, and so on and so forth. I was watching my daughter, Allie, with our 3.5-year-old grandson, who is just an amazing youngster. And Allie has these two marvelous traits of, one, you know all the time, she really loves this child to pieces. And you know also that she is as determined as a boot camp sergeant to be respected and have a little cold, be respectful to adults.
Yes.
And I think that both those things are so incredibly important. And if you don't have moral authority literally over your child, if you don't feel you are the authority and that you have a right to exercise that, and that child is going to, you know, take seriously what you're saying, then you're going to end up really being angry at the child and hating the child because so much turmoil, and also because the child will get very anxious.
Yeah.
Because not having love is devastating. Not having love produces, you know, all the worst and deepest psychiatric problems.
Yeah.
But not having discipline produces horrendous anxiety and fear in a child. They need to know they're not in charge. They know they can't handle life. They can't go out and earn a living. They can't make good decisions. They know that.
Yes.
And if if they feel they can take over, it's horribly anxiety-provoking for them. You see that the same way?
Yes, very, very well put. I can tell you've done a lot of this work. Very well put. It reminds me of last night, 8:30, 8:45 in the pool. Let's see, how many grandkids were there? Five. And they all wanted to be on Papa's back and playing, and I was pushing this brand-new blow-up swan with one of my grandchildren on it, and I accidentally pushed it into someone, and that person dumped the swan because they were angry that they got pushed into, and the parent said, "You have a timeout over there," and there was a lot of protest, but consequence was imposed, and there was no talking. So that was very important to see how that was done. And all too often, a parent in that situation nowadays might end up doing quite a bit of talking and not doing anything. But there has to be a certain amount of hurting about what you've done to hurt someone. What I mean by that is not the child is hurt by someone, but that they feel like they really want to continue to swim, but you can't because you crossed a boundary, and that wasn't respectful what you did. So that was a good demonstration of it, and I think it's really important for all of our listeners, and I have to remember this, is that this all starts at around 1.5, 2, 3 years of age. This respect means that they have to learn that the immediate response that I've got, my way or the highway, has to be stopped starting in those toddler years, and it has to be stopped in the most firm way that you possibly can, and it usually means acting. And that, like I've said before, picking the child up sometimes and just taking him to another room and say, "We can't handle our upset feelings like that. You may have wanted that little toy that your sister had, but you can't have it. No matter if you're upset or not, you can't have it. When I say no, I mean no," and you talk just a little bit, but you have to pick the child up and carry him, go to the other room.
Of course, that ends at a pretty early age, picking up kids, but I certainly think it could be done early on in infancy and small childhood. I think, first of all, people's styles can differ tremendously.
Yes. Yes.
And some people will go to a timeout when they see something like that happening. I know, I think my daughter or myself, we would more likely go to just a direct, "Hey, that is not allowed."
Yes. Yes.
And probably just pass on. And, another important thing is just, and we should come back to this, it's the relationship that makes a child listen. It's the moral authority, but it's also not wanting to disappoint the loved parent.
Yes.
So when things are really going well, say with a child who's 3.5 or 4 or 5, a parent should not have to do much more than show some disapproval on the face for the child to have a second thought about what they're doing. Not by being terrorized because they're not going to get hit, but by, "Hey, I'm getting a signal from Dad and Mom that this is not the way I'm supposed to be."
Yeah.
But you got to have your relationship for that, you know? You got to have that loving relationship, and you got to have that moral relationship. Gary, we're coming near to our break. We got about a minute to break. In 1 minute, tell people how they can get in touch with you, and we'll be going to break.
Yes, parentallove.com is my website, and my cell phone number is 719-660-0253, and I'd be more than happy to respond to not a lot of phone calls, but be nice to look at my website and refer
this
to that.
This is archived, Gary, so you may get calls 3 years from now.
Yeah. And so, do I have 30 seconds or not?
But just tell folks where you live, what part of the world you're in.
It's Colorado Springs, Colorado. And do you want me to give the address?
I think it's fine that you've given them your website and your phone number.
Okay.
We don't want people marching up to see you uninvited.
No.
We're talking to Gary Unruh. And Gary, am I pronouncing your name properly?
Yeah, you're doing it very well. That's unusual.
Okay, this is Dr. Peter Bregan, and we're going to break.
You are listening to the Dr. Peter Bregan Hour on the Progressive Radio Network. Stay tuned, stay in touch, and call in with your questions at 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888.
You're listening to the Progressive Radio Network, your number one source for progressive commentary.
Have you heard? The Burt Cohen Show brings you the hidden truths behind the stories that affect us all and gives you the information you need to build freedom, community, and a much better world. This is Burt Cohen. My past shows include The New Media Power of Comcast, Socialism for Wall Street Only, and How to Empower Your Own Community Over Corporate Interests. For archives, go to ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com and listen to The Burt Cohen Show every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. The Burt Cohen Show. There's really nothing like it.
Every Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, join the founders of the Godspeed Institute for Spiritual Learning, Carol and Michael Hallenbeck, for Godspeed, an enlightening and informative journey into the world's religions and spiritual belief systems. Through conversations with experts worldwide, this weekly live call-in program is an on-air classroom aimed at helping listeners gain exposure to and insight into religious and spiritual practices around the world, every Sunday, 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
I'm Dr. Peter Bregan, author of Talking Back to Prozac, Toxic Psychiatry, and Medication Madness. Listen to my newly syndicated talk show, the Dr. Peter Bregan Hour, and find out why they call me the Conscience of Psychiatry. Hear my cutting-edge guests expose the dangers of conventional psychiatric diagnosis, drugs, and shock treatment. Learn about better ways, better therapeutic and spiritual approaches to healing ourselves and to making the most of our lives in a responsible, loving, and creative manner. Make your life turn out the way you want. Join me every 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, live or on the archive at ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com.
Why should you be listening to the Progressive Radio Network? Here are a few hosts that call PRN home. Award-winning investigative journalist and documentary filmmaker Michael Ruppert. Acclaimed theoretical physicist Michio Kaku. Notable media critic and international journalist, the news dissector, Danny Schechter. Leading progressive journalists such as Stephen Ledman, John Rappaport, and Glenn Ford have also found a home with us. We also have advice from Richard Martin on how to protect yourself from the ongoing financial collapse. John Mueller tells us his firsthand account on moving out of the U.S. and making a new life for himself in another country on his show, The Expat Files. Along with all these informative programs, we also have health shows hosted by America's top doctors like Mayor Eisenstein, Cheryl Selman, and of course, Gary Null. The Progressive Radio Network is the place for news and information.
Listening to the number one internet radio station for progressive minds, the Progressive Radio Network.
And this is Dr. Peter Bregan. And this has been an exciting show, in both for content and challenges, as I've been broadcasting initially on my mini computer from near the Outer Banks of North Carolina, with a violent thunderstorm passing through and cutting off internet connection, and then switching on to cell phone. And now with the sun shining again, back to the internet connection. And my guest, Gary Unruh, and he's a licensed clinical social worker from Colorado Springs, Colorado. We're talking about raising kids. The principles that I've been talking about really mesh with Gary's. It's really a conversation. We both agree that the starting point is love. It's empathic, caring love. And that this is something that parents under normal conditions will feel a lot of. But when things go bad, we withdraw that love. We don't want to, and we shouldn't, but we often do. We've all fallen into that trap. Now, beyond love, and there's a lot needed beyond love. Beyond love is needed a relationship. And a lot of times when kids come in to me and they're diagnosed with ADD or pervasive developmental disorder or autistic spectrum or whatever, the first thing I notice is the parents are too busy, too anxious, too stressed to really be building relationship. Or at some earlier time, they were in a bad way in regard to building relationship. And if you've got a kid who's doing relatively well but somewhat out of control, the odds are that dad isn't around, or dad's too busy, and mom is trying to handle one, two, three, or more children, either with literally an absent dad or a dad who's very busy earning a living and doing other things. And so we want love. We got to have the love. You got to have a lot of relationship. There's just no way around that. That's the glue. Love and relationship is what is the sunshine, the water, the nutrients of the child. And psychologically, nobody grows up without being severely injured if they don't get tons of love and relationship, and usually and hopefully from an extended family. And not just a single isolated family, if possible. And then there is this really tough problem of setting boundaries or teaching respect. And to me, the first boundary, the critical boundary, and I always emphasize this with parents, leave the office today determined that the one thing you'll focus on when you get home is the expectation that everyone talks respectfully in the family. And even if mom or dad glitches and isn't totally respectful, there is no excuse for the child being disrespectful. That the big gift beyond love you give to a child is teaching that child to respect other human beings. And once you get respect going, then you can talk about the car and dating, or you can talk about eating your bananas. If you can talk about anything if the respect is established. And parents today often haven't put in the love and the relationship to earn that respect and to demand it, because you both earn it by the relationship, and then you have to demand it when necessary as the authority. And that's my little thumbnail of what raising kids is about, and my golly, it's oversimplification, but it's got some truth in it. Your thoughts, Gary?
First of all, so very well put. I can tell that this is heartfelt, and I want to really emphasize this respect piece. You're not going to get, all of us know this, we're not going to get very far in the world if we're not respectful. So let me give you a couple of points that have seem to really help on the operational side, you know, where the rubber hits the road. Number one, respect can't be taught when there's excessive anger. So think of a little thermometer, 1 to 10, with 5 being just about enough heat where you're saying stuff like, I'm really concerned about what you're doing. Tone of voice high, but It's kind, but it's firm, and your face is firm. 6 and 7, more loud, more stern face, and 8 is screaming and yelling and maybe some physical stuff. So what we need to do when we're teaching respect is we need to keep our tone of voice, our facial expressions, and the words that we use in that 5 range. Both parents need to keep it that way, and the kids do. So I've got this little thermometer up here. You can draw it yourself. And when the kids get to 5.5, and if one of the parents sees the other parent get to a 5.5 and above, what they do is they say, we need to stop talking now because this isn't respectful behavior. And, Peter, I can tell you that that little simple tool, when the kids know that number, and the parents do, and we all agree on using it, when it gets to a 5.5 or more, everybody knows it, and they can get trained within a session or so to stop talking and come back and to have a dialogue when it's in that range of talking. So that's number one.
I think that's a great piece of advice. Go ahead.
And if I'm going on too much, just stop.
No.
The other critical piece is, and you've said it so well, I have a few numbers to put into this bonding relationship thing. If the kids don't have an adequate feeling that the parents really feel like they're fundamentally good, the child is not going to be that respectful of the parent when they set demands. And here's the key that I found to this. And it's just remarkable how it works. 15 minutes of undivided attention Monday through Thursday during the school year. I'm talking about that. Undivided attention, of course, the message to the kid is, my dad and my mom, they feel I'm important enough that they can drop everything that they're doing and do something I like. One or two times of that, and I can't get parents, really good parents that really, really work hard, to do it more than once a week, Peter. But even once a week, and then the other half is once a month for 3 to 4 hours away from the home on the weekend, do something with the child that they want to do. Again, it's a big turbocharge of, I'm really important to my mom and dad, and they're going to put their everything they're doing away, and they're going to go with me. And what I found, Peter, is that when that simple approach is done, when you're doing these other things like you talked about, there's a significant improvement in respect. And that's just a couple of key things that I found to be really helpful.
Yeah, I like everything you're saying. I think it's very important for parents to have some simple concepts and for the children to have some simple concepts about proper communication. And I think that those are good ones. I think it also helps for basically for each partner in the relationship, the adult partners, to have an agreement on all of this. Because yep. one of the things I noticed is that there's a wide range of effective parenting approaches,
yes,
from somewhat permissive to somewhat authoritarian. Somewhere in there, there's a big range. But the one thing that there can't be any real range in is the agreement between the caregivers, yep, the parents in particular, on what is proper child rearing.
Yes.
Because if the child is getting mixed and confused messages,
yes,
it doesn't matter whether you're generally on the right track or not, the child is going to act out in terms of using the parents, abusing the parents, and it's just incredibly important for parents to come to some simple agreements about these issues of respect, the issue that Gary's talking about, that at a certain point of anger, there's no point to talking. We all take a breather at this point, and we point out that anger has taken over, and we take a breather, and then we come back when we can be respectful and when we have our anger under control. Almost anything said in anger will be a mini disaster,
yep,
a mini disaster, if not a full-blown disaster.
Yes.
Not easy raising kids. Some more of your thoughts on all of this.
Yes, very, very well put, by the way. I say to parents, it's the only 25-8 job in the world, and it's got the highest risk of failure of any 28-5 job. 28-8, I guess it would be anything. Anyway, it's over. It's really a very, very hard work. Just a couple of points to supplement your very, very well-stated comments. I have on the parent agreement, absolutely critical. Brand new research has been coming out of Berkeley, Colorado, with a couple by the name of Cohen, and it just came over the internet here last week, that parents that demonstrate good problem solving without anger, working through problems to a solution, where the actual solution to problems is demonstrated, not the technical part, but they see mom and dad discussing things in a civil way, and they actually solve the problems in front of the kids, there's significant improvement in academic performance and good behavior with these children. So I thought I would share that with your audience, that mom and dad make sure you not only do what Peter's talking about, agree with the whatever it's going to be that you're going to do, whatever you're going to do, whatever you're going to focus on, let's say stopping arguing, for example. Make sure you focus on that. Everybody's clear that the arguing is going to have to stop. Secondly, that you agree to follow through every time. And when you have that agreement, that's going to demonstrate to the child that you're consistent and that there's not going to be any ifs, ands, buts about it. It's got to be done. But let's remember, mom and dad getting along and working through their differences in a way that comes to a solution is extremely profound and powerful for children to watch. I might also add, Peter, that I have a procedure called discussion procedure. It's a modification of Imago therapy and some of those types of things. And basically, when there's a big problem that comes up, the procedure has three simple steps. Kid talks, the parent listens, and right after they listen, the first step is to repeat back what the child said. Very reinforcing. Secondly, the parent says to the child what they agree with, even if it's with the feeling. Like, I can see how you'd feel that way, or you should be upset. And then the third thing is to be empathetic about it. If I were in your shoes, I'd feel that way too. Then after that discussion procedures happen, so many kids, just to digress a little bit, Peter, tell me, my parents don't understand me. Really, Peter, what they're saying is my parents don't agree with me. But if you cover this understanding part, then you can go to the part that you're going to set the boundaries on and say, I understand that you feel this way. You know that I heard you, don't you? The kid says yes. And then you say, here's what the consequence is going to be. Here's what we have to do about it. And you have to respect this, and I'm going to ask that you follow through with it. So that would be a little bit of a contribution I would give to your comments about respect and bonding.
I think it really helps parents to know. I know I'm coming back to this again and again, but it's so critical to know that they have the right to a peaceful, respectful home. And I know Gary and I really are agreeing on this one.
Yeah.
That parents have a right to establish a peaceful, respectful, caring tone to the relationships and to the home. And that's in how everyone treats everyone. But it isn't a quid pro quo. It's not like just because you got a little irritable with your child, now your child gets to get irritable with you. You want to hold your child to expectations of being respectful. And if you don't do that, you're really committing an act against your child, to not find within yourself the strength to teach your child to respect you. The firmness, the confidence, it's really not good for your kid. It is never good to let your kid be in charge. Even a teenager, until they go off to college, needs to know that it's your home, you're in charge. You'll talk to them about stuff, or at times you might even say, no, this is not discussable at this point. This is what the rule is going to be. We'll talk about it later. You present a very positive picture, Gary, about the ability to have conversations with children. I find it a little more dicey than that. I think often the kids don't know what they feel. especially if they're very upset, they don't have any idea where their feelings are coming from. So talk some more about the difficulties of getting kids to express their feelings.
Yes. First of all, you're exactly right. You know, Daniel Goleman, famous for emotional intelligence and all the good things that he's done. My program emphasizes, and I'm sure you know all about this, getting that emotional language out at 2 years of age and up. So just a very brief point, start with a two-year-old, and when they do something, I don't like that, make sure and say, separate the behavior, which is the yelling, from the feeling. Help them right away to know that feeling drives the behavior, and say something like, you're really upset and handling it by yelling. And then as that goes on, what I found with the kids that I work with, I start at 2 years of age in my practice, when the parents can help the kids identify the feeling that's causing the behavior, by the time they get to the adolescent age, they're, well, matter of fact, I can tell you by 3, 4, and 5 years of age, these children, when they've got the feeling disconnected from the behavior, they can end up starting to verbalize the feeling right away. Now, if you're starting at 12, 13 years of age, it's never too late to start. Help the child to put into words what their negative behavior is, and it actually is as simple as this in my practice, and that is to use the word upset. That gets you into the affective, the feeling world, and to put words to the arguing or the swearing or the yelling and say, you're upset and you're swearing. That way of handling your upset feelings will not be allowed. We'll need to get away from each other. After you do that for a couple of weeks, Peter, what I found in that training is that when you set the limits for the inappropriate way to be upset, these kids can be trained, and it is training, it doesn't come natural, to put words to the affective world. In my experience, they can be trained to first say, I'm really upset at a 5.5, if you will, and below, almost every time within, I'm not talking about kids that have real serious emotional difficulties. I'm talking about the run-of-the-mill kids, and even those kids that have a serious emotional difficulties, they can be trained to do this too. That's,
you know, it's
my
interesting
short
that you're using the word training, and I myself would prefer to call it reasoning, because it puts the emphasis on the child's expression and own thinking processes. But
yes,
you know, I mean, this is just, it's fun when we have so much agreement to make some distinctions.
Yes.
I find in my practice that I can reason with a child, let's say a, you know, 8-year-old comes in, been diagnosed with pervasive developmental disorder, or nearly, you know, some, you know, nearly on the autistic end of the spectrum, and this little boy is making funny faces, and as soon as something at all tense and anxious comes up, which is going to happen in an opening family session with mom and dad, little boy runs and sticks his head between mother's legs or behind the couch, and I say, hey, Jake, come on back out here. Come on back out here. And I want you to sit down, talk to me a minute. And I would say to little Jake, you know, Jake, I know you're having a little trouble getting along with your friends. I want to teach you to behave in a way that isn't going to have the other kids look at you like there's something wrong with you. Because when you run around like that and the other kids are going to think there's something wrong with you, I really want to help you not do that. And to me, it's a caring reasoning. It's a training. And kids do respond. Even children who are being labeled, you know, near the psychotic end of the world,
yes,
respond to a caring discussion, yes, about what they really need to do to take better care of themselves. And
yes,
and I always try to emphasize that. Well, I go both ways. I'll emphasize that this is for your good. This is going to help you. But also, you need to respect other people. You can't just go and jump on someone else's body, you know. You got to respect them, and then you got to expect them to respect you. And this is how you're going to be respected, by conducting yourself in a different way. And it's this combination. one of the things I've noticed as I've gotten older is it seems to work better than it used to, because I think that the kids aren't reacting to me like their parents anymore. They're reacting to me like their grandparents.
Yes.
Or even their great-grandparents. So they're willing to listen a little better. Your thoughts, sir?
Yes, so very well put. I can see that you've had a tremendous amount of experience there, and there's nothing like it working. Is there, Peter, as a therapist, to have confidence?
No, I love doing therapy. I think you do, too.
And, yeah,
And hopefully we learn over the years, and as in all other things, you know, I think we're better at some things when we're 25 or 30, and
yes,
better at other things as we get older, and people respond to us differently as we get older. I mean, people used to try things in therapy that were boundary violations when I was 30 that no one would think of now that I'm 75. I still enjoy very much doing therapy. I know you're not quite as old as me, but you've been working a long time.
I'm right there. May I make a supplemental point to this training reasoning piece? I think it's a very nice discussion we're having, and I know we're just about out of time. The reasoning with plenty of talk, this is what I found in my practice, Peter. The reasoning has worked better in my practice when the emotions are 5.5 and below, you know, my little thermometer,
mm-hmm.
and with plenty of making my point in question form so the child can do most of the thinking and get it ingrained in their memory bank. So that's a little bit of a trick that I found to be useful on the reasoning part, which I couldn't agree with you more. When I get to the training part, that's when the rubber hits the road and the habit of containing the strong emotion has not really been integrated yet. I believe it's more in the realm of training where you need to do this now. And if you don't, I'll follow through with it with action. So that's just a little additional supplemental point I would make to you.
Yeah, I think that makes some sense. I think it makes a lot of sense. Any finishing thoughts that you want to contribute in the next literally 60 seconds?
I would just say this. In my experience, and it's a little bit controversial, almost every child I've ever met wants to be good. And if we can tap into that with what we've talked about today, good relationship, teaching them, training them to be respectful, that part of them, the fundamental part of them that is good enough, really will be developed to its fullest. And I've seen it over and over again. I'm sure, Peter, you've seen
yes.
it. That fundamental desire to be good will be fully developed. And the beauty of seeing a fully developed child that's had appropriate boundaries and learn to be respectful, it's a beautiful thing to see. And that's what I would say that is thrilling to me to see happen. And I might say it takes a lot of
patience.
We got
to finish. You've been listening to Gary Unruh from Colorado Springs, Colorado, and this is Dr. Peter Bregan. Good night.
You've been listening to the Dr. Peter Bregan Hour with a new live show every Monday evening at 5 p.m. East Coast time on the Progressive Radio Network, where each show is archived for your convenience. You can learn more about Dr. Bregan and his lifelong reform work on www.bregan.com. That's B-R-E-G-G-I-N.com.